Our CBS Sunday Morning Podcast is sponsored by Edward Jones. College tours with your oldest daughter, updating the kitchen to the appropriate decade, retiring on the coast. Life is full of moments that matter, and Edward Jones helps you make the most of them. That's why every Edward Jones financial advisor works with you to build personalized strategies for now and down the road. So when your next moment arrives, big or small, you're ready for it. Life is for living. Let's partner for all of it. Learn more at edwardjones.com.
I'm Jane Pauley, and this is Sunday Morning. We like to celebrate people of remarkable talent and accomplishment whenever we can, people who are aiming high. And in all the world of competitive sport, we're hard-pressed to think of anyone aiming higher than the man Lee Cowan will be introducing us to.
Maybe you're not a fan of archery, but it's impossible not to be a fan of Matt Stutzman, who's risen to the highest rankings in the sport, despite lacking two very important things.
So how did you figure it out?
So, ironically, I Googled how to teach an armless man how to shoot a bow.
Not a lot of results.
Nothing.
The athlete who calls himself the armless archer, ahead on Sunday Morning.
We'll take note this morning of the seemingly never-fading popularity of Jeff Lynne's Electric Light Orchestra. You can count David Pogue among its fans.
After 30 years away, Jeff Lynne's Electric Light Orchestra is back.
I went to the concert with my family, and the place was packed, and people were screaming and singing along and dancing.
I was there as well.
Meet the man behind ELO, ahead on Sunday Morning.
3 years ago this coming Saturday, an arrest in the college town of Oberlin, Ohio, triggered demonstrations, boycotts, and a lawsuit that asked what price is a family's reputation worth? An issue Ted Koppel will explore.
No justice! No peace!
No justice! No peace!
A petty crime, charges of racism, and a controversy that lingers to this day.
It had taken generations to build this reputation for us. And in just one day, we had lost it.
Which raises a fair question. What is a fair price for a family's reputation? Ahead on Sunday Morning.
With Nancy Giles, we'll be visiting best-selling author Mitch Albom, a unique family man whose charitable work in Haiti has changed any number of lives, including his own.
For the last 10 years, Mitch Albom has spent 4 days a month with his kids at the Half Faith Haiti Mission.
Janine and I didn't have kids, and suddenly we have 47 kids. Probably somewhere in between 0 and 47 is the average and normal desired size, but that's okay. I like having 47 kids.
Count on me.
Now he's written a new book about one of those kids, a very special little girl, Finding Chica, later on Sunday Morning.
Connor Knighton gets us into an art show truly like none other. Even its name stands out, Meow Wolf. With Mo Rocca, we'll launch a new season of Mobituaries. Steve Hartman shares a very special love story. And more, all coming up when our Sunday Morning podcast continues. Aiming high is the goal of any participant in a competitive sport. But few have had to reach further than the man Lee Cowan has been watching in action.
You're looking at one of the top-ranked archers in the country, 36-year-old Matt Stutzman of Fairfield, Iowa.
The last time we looked into it, 1% of archers in the world make a living shooting a bow.
He's not bragging. He's really just that good. And he has the accolades to prove it.
January of 2010 is when I decided to be the best archer in the world. And by 2011, I had already made the U.S. team. And by 2012, I went to my first games.
And won them.
And won a silver, right?
And he did it all with his feet. Yep, one of the most celebrated archers in the world was born without arms.
When it first started, it was like, look at this guy without arms. And now it's like, ugh, Matt's here.
His competitors have learned to fear him. Not only those at the Paralympic Games in London, where he won his silver medal, but also able-bodied archers that he's bested time and time again.
Wow.
So that was like my first...
Number one in the world.
Number one in the world.
So just how does he do it?
Because you basically just had to figure this all out. There's no manual for this.
No, no. And
his only adaptation is a strap around his chest, which he uses to pull the bowstring back.
And at this point, I'm adjusting my strap to make sure it's in the same place. That way when I draw the bow back, I push my leg away from my chest. I bring my right shoulder up and I set it. Bring my face down to my release. And then I shoot.
That is so amazing.
If I can take a bow that's not modified for me and I can compete against people that have arms and beat them at their own sport, well then what's everybody else's excuse? This is where I come back for the tiebreaker.
Matt's pretty easy to spot at a tournament. He's usually the only one sitting down. He knows he's the center of attention, and believe it or not, he actually likes it that way.
For me, I'm used to being looked at all the time, right? For most archers who are able-bodied have never had that experience, so when it's time to make it count, then they get nervous where I don't get the nervousness like they do. Because I've been in this situation my whole life.
In case you can't tell already, this single father of three certainly doesn't consider himself disabled at all.
Are there times, though, that you just wish you had arms?
No.
Really?
Not once. No.
Now, you might find that surprising, but he's serious. When we went out to lunch, eating with his feet was as ordinary as anything.
Right.
To him.
I can hold my fork, and I just stab and dunk and eat.
Back at his house, we watched him change a tire. It was pretty hard not to offer help, but the fact was, he really didn't need it.
I call this a unicorn.
Why?
He is a car nut. He always has been.
It's a Nissan with the new Corvette engine in it.
He can outdrive just about anyone. Yep, with his feet.
So right now, my right foot is on the steering wheel, and my left foot runs the gas and the brake.
And none of this is modified for you?
Nope. This is completely just like anybody can drive this car.
Well, not exactly. At least not the way he drives it, doing donuts in a parking lot and all.
I even have a motorcycle permit.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. I can legally ride an unmodified motorcycle with my friends.
It all started right after Matt was born, when his birth parents learned something had gone wrong.
Based on what the doctors told them, that was too much for them.
They were just overwhelmed.
So they put Matt up for adoption. He was just 2 months old. Okay. And not long after that, Gene and Leon Stutzman entered his life.
So do you remember the first time you saw him?
Oh, yes. Well, he was this little curly-head, blonde-head guy, and he just kind of sat up and, like, well, here I am.
And so he, you know, picked up the little guy, and he was just cute, a little stinker. Fell in love immediately, I guess.
They raised him along with their 7 other children, just like any other kid.
Were there times when you'd see him doing something like riding a motorcycle or something, and you'd just look out the window and say, oh, my God, how?
Please protect him.
That's when he went into double prayer time.
They gave Matt prosthetic limbs at one point, but they sat on his shelf most of the time. So they decided not to really modify anything in their home.
We've decided not to do anything just because he's not going to live in a handicapped world. He's going to live in a world where people expect.
He has to adapt.
He has to adapt to those kind of things. And so that's kind of the way our philosophy that we took is to figure it out.
I don't think it was an orchestrated thing. It was just kind of, he'll find his way. He'll figure it out.
And he did. But as Matt got older, despite his abilities and his willingness to try anything, there weren't many willing to give him a try.
Couldn't find a job.
No one would give you a chance?
No. Like, I even went to try to do a typing job because I was that desperate to try to figure out something.
So what was your mindset at that point?
I was pretty depressed, you know?
Yeah.
Supposed to be a man taking care of your kids, and nobody would give me a chance to prove myself.
It was 2009, at the height of the financial crisis. But it also happened to be deer season in Iowa. He thought if he could just teach himself how to shoot a bow, maybe he could at least bag a deer and feed his family.
I went up and bought the cheapest bow I could find. And I actually went out that year and shot a deer. I'm now excited about life again because I had just set a goal, went out, and accomplished putting food on the table.
To earn a little extra cash, he started entering target shooting competitions, where one bow maker actually asked to sponsor him. Pretty exciting, right? It was, until a friend of Matt's told him why.
And he goes, Matt, the reason why they sponsor you is because you have no arms, and you draw attention to their product, and it's not because you're good.
Wow.
The reality was I wasn't that good, and I didn't want to be known as, like, the sideshow or the guy who gets stuff because he had no arms. I wanted to be known as the best archer in the world.
That's where it clicked.
And that's where it clicked for me. I'm like, hey, I'm going to prove everybody wrong. I'm going to show them that I am the best and that I deserve sponsorship because I'm the best, not because I'm unique or different.
Matt's aiming for a spot at the 2020 Paralympic Games in Tokyo next summer. And while he says a gold would sure be nice, that's not all he's after anymore.
I started archery just to provide for my family, right? So, but now I've seen it's much bigger. So when someone with a disability comes up to me saying they saw me do this or that, and now they can do that, then it makes me feel good about myself.
Yeah, that must be really
the feeling is, it's almost better than winning. Like, what is defining of the best archer in the world? The best archer in the world is somebody who changes the sport, makes it better, or changes people that watch make them better. In my mind, that's considered the best archer in the world.
Mitch Albom is more than just a best-selling author. He's also quite a family man with 47 kids and one very special memory. Here's Nancy Childs.
Line up, line up.
The first day of school at the Have Faith Haiti Mission in Port-au-Prince.
Miss Patty's going to pick a name.
New backpacks.
Yeah. Are you going to take care of it all year?
Yes.
New school uniforms. New teachers.
Are you ready for school?
Yes.
And at the center of it all, Mitch Albom. Yep, that Mitch Albom. The guy who wrote Tuesdays with Maury and lots of other bestsellers.
Oh, your backpack is so big we can put you inside it.
Straightening backpacks.
How smart are you going to get?
Giving pep talks. And doing whatever needs doing to get the school year off to a good start.
So 10 years ago, when you first came to Haiti, did you plan to run an orphanage?
So you start with the funny question.
Hey, you know?
We sat down with Mitch and his wife Janine in late August.
I didn't even know where Haiti was on a map. I was moved by what happened in the earthquake.
It's been almost 10 years since that terrible earthquake devastated Haiti, killing over 100,000 people and leaving millions more injured and homeless. Like so many others, Mitch Albom wanted to help.
And we landed just a few weeks after the earthquake. You saw people missing arms and legs walking around and covered in white dust. And then here was this little oasis where there were these kids.
Kids huddled in an orphanage.
I saw kids sleeping on the ground here. I didn't even know if they had parents. Makeshift foam mattresses, not eating anything.
He flew home to Detroit, but
I couldn't leave it alone. I couldn't get it out of my head. I mean, there were no toilets, really. There was no shower. There was no real kitchen to speak of. And so I said, well, I live in Detroit. You know, we do things with our hands in Detroit. And I put a call out.
23 people answered the call.
They called themselves the Detroit Muscle Crew.
Love it.
Little t-shirts. We built the first real toilets, showers, kitchen, dining area.
Okay, get under the water.
I was here for the first showers. I'll never forget that. They didn't know what it was. I said, are you ready? Yeah. We turned the water on, and the water came down. It was like witnessing the Lord's first rainstorm. They went nuts with glee and water. And then they started doing this dance, singing and dancing, pushing off the walls.
That
is
hard.
Now the children of the mission have daily classes in English and French. They study music and science and math.
What's your favorite part of school?
Science.
Science. I love that.
They have regular medical checkups, 3 healthy meals a day, and a lot of big dreams.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be a doctor and a writer.
A surgeon.
I want to be a lawyer.
I want to study business. I want to be a businessman.
Mm-hmm. I want to be a veterinarian.
Really?
I love animals. And I want to be a Chinese translator.
When Jane Pauley visited with Mitch Albom 5 years ago in Detroit, he was spending 4 days every month with his kids in Haiti. He still does. But something has changed since then. A little girl named Chica arrived.
Was she special from the very beginning?
Oh, yeah.
Chica,
I remember.
She had a spark.
You know, most of the kids are shy and they'll lower their eyes and everything. Chica's just sat back and
shut so him
out.
I looked at
her. It was like it's.
And I went, and she went, and then I laughed, and then she laughed, and I said, well, I've met my match.
But when Chica was 5, the director noticed something was wrong. Her eye drooped. They found the one MRI scanner in all of Haiti and got this report.
The child has a mass on her brain. We don't know what it is, but whatever it is, there's nobody in Haiti who can help her. And that was basically our clarion call to say she's going to have to come to America.
And that changed everything for you guys.
It changed everything.
Count on me on 1, 2, 3.
Mitch and Janine took little Chica into their home and into their hearts.
All of a sudden, here was Chica, and she was there.
You put your right hand.
For 2 years, together, they battled DIPG, a rare pediatric brain tumor. And they laughed and danced and sang.
Hold it up.
And became a family.
I am a child, oh God.
And it was a glorious blessing.
And she wasn't the perfect child, but she was perfect for us.
Right.
She really was.
Just capturing you forever.
A journey Mitch Albom has written about in his new book, Finding Chica.
Families are like pieces of art. You can make them from almost anything, any kind of material. And sometimes they look like you, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they come from your DNA, and sometimes they don't. And the only ingredient you need to make a family is love, unconditional love.
Chica died at age 7, but her story continues. The proceeds from Mitch Albom's book will build a new earthquake-proof school for all their other children.
Janine and I didn't have kids, and suddenly we have 47 kids. Probably somewhere in between 0 and 47 is the average and normal desired size, but that's okay. I like having 47 kids.
So I just listened to
Mitch and Janine's 2 oldest kids, Mano and Sam, are now sophomores at Madonna University.
Is it named after Madonna the singer?
No, not at all.
It's in Detroit, where Mitch can still give them pep talks, as he did in Haiti.
Every single time he came, he always talked about college with me. And this pushed me, and it's like, okay, and maybe I can do it, really.
Mano's dream is to become a doctor.
I want to go back to Haiti. Just seeing kids, you know, in the street, just living on the floor, and this breaks me. But it kind of gives me strength to go hard and to do whatever I can here.
Did Mitch and Janine, did they change because of their relationship with Chica and their relationship with you guys at the orphanage?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about it.
You could see the change. They really, like,
They show us. They like to show us love.
Love is all that I can give to you.
At the close of every day, Mitch Albom's kids remember Chica by singing her favorite song.
Every day we sing this song just to remember her and to keep her here in our lives.
She's taught a lot of kids here what they need to do with their lives and how precious life is. She taught me when I had to carry her from place to place towards the end of her life. We were sitting and coloring. I looked at my watch. I jumped up. I said, Chica, I gotta go. She said, no, stay and color. I said, Chica, I have to work. This is my job. And she crossed her arms the way that she always did, and she said, no, it isn't. Your job is carrying me, like that. Well, of course it is. Of course that's my job. My job was to carry her, and my job is to carry them.
Good night, Chica.
Hi, podcast peeps. It's me, Drew Barrymore. Oh, my goodness. I want to tell you about our new show. It's the Drew's News Podcast. And in each episode, me and a weekly guest are going to cover all the quirky, fun, inspiring, and informative stories that exist out in the world because, well, I need it. And maybe you do, too. From the newest interior design trend, Barbiecore, to the right and wrong way to wash your armpits. Also, we're going to get into things that you just kind of won't believe and we're not able to do in daytime television, so watch out. Listen to Drew's News wherever you get your podcasts. It's your good news on the go.
No deeper love can be imagined than the one enjoyed all too briefly by one very devoted couple. Steve Hartman has their story.
Thank you all for coming to this special occasion.
Deep in New York's Adirondack Mountains, friends and family gathered to help 59-year-old Chris Sharoon DeForge pay tribute to her remarkable husband.
Your marriage to Paul was one for the history books.
What did you love about him?
Yeah,
his sense of humor. He got me laughing and everything. He was the one for me.
That's him?
That's me and my Polly.
Chris and Paul met in 1988, and after dating 5 years, they became one of the first couples in the world with Down syndrome to get married.
I proposed to him.
You proposed to him?
Yes. I whispered in his ear, would you marry me? And he looked up with me with his big, beautiful smile. He shook his head, yes.
What's on the menu for tonight?
But Chris's sister, Susan Sharoon, says it took a lot more than yes to get them to I Do. There were marriage classes, counseling sessions, and a whole lot of pushback from supposedly able-minded people.
Yeah, there really was quite a bit of resistance. There was a feeling that it was like children getting married versus two, you know, very capable adults.
Today, people with Down syndrome who want to get married still face resistance. There's still some question as to whether couples like Chris and Paul love as deeply as the rest of us. And in fact, we saw evidence that maybe they don't, that maybe their love is deeper.
Thanks to you and Paul, everyone here has seen what true love looks like.
At the end of the ceremony,
beautiful.
Chris spread a portion of her husband's ashes near the lake where he loved to fish.
Yes, you love him so much.
The rest will be mixed with hers one day.
I love you.
And buried together.
I did the best I can.
You were the best wife, Annie. Husband could ever have.
It was an intensely intimate moment shared with you today.